Well, it's Labor Day, but I'm coming your way live, and I've got a lot on my mind. Ready to talk to you today, right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I hope you are having a great Labor Day. I hope you've got a day off, day to be with family, day to relax. I'm doing this show live because I get to, because I love being on the radio with you, and it gives me an opportunity to talk to some of you that don't get to listen because of work and other schedules. And we've got a whole lot of things we're going to be talking about today on The Line of Fire. So even if you're missing it live, you'll be able to catch it fully on podcast or archived on our website. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. If you want to call, if you want to ask me a question like you would on Friday, you've got questions, we've got answers. If there's something that seems totally random you want to bring up and get my input on, today's a good day to do it. But I've got a bunch of things I want to talk to you about as well. Here's the number to call, though, if you want to join in, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you're tuning in for the first time, you're in a car when you're normally not, at a time when you're normally not, welcome to the Line of Fire broadcast, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. One of the questions I want to ask you today and talk to you about it is the question of statesmen. Where are the statesmen in our society today? Where are the men and women with moral courage and backbone that can inspire a nation? Rather than getting down to the level of the people and staying there, reaches everybody and raises the vision. Boy, where are the statesmen? I wrote an article about that'll be out online within the next 24 hours. So I want to share some of that with you. Endurance swimmer Diana Nyad, at the age of 64, has just completed a 112-mile swim without sleep. I can't understand it. I can't fathom this. But I want to talk to you a little bit about endurance today. I got some e-questions I want to answer, a whole lot of things to cover. All right. Special programming note. Tomorrow, during this hour, so first hour, 2 to 3 Eastern Standard Time, tomorrow, I'm going to have Pastor Jay Hayslip on with me. He's a pastor in California, but you may have been seeing his name now because he is one of the pastors on the Preachers of L.A. reality TV series soon to start. The show has been getting a lot of controversy, a lot of attack. I want to bring Jay on to talk about it. I preached for Jay some years ago. At a men's meeting, he asked me to bring my Acharit message, which is the most intense holiness message I've preached, and it's well known. He asked me to preach that. He asked me to preach to his congregation on a Sunday morning the theme of Jesus Revolution. As far as I know, he's a soul winner, a disciple maker. Is he making a mistake to be on this TV show? Is it being misrepresented? Is he going to get a good message out? We'll talk to him tomorrow, first hour, so Tuesday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard, right here on The Line of Fire. Don't miss it. All right, so friends, just want to let you know what's coming. Yeah, Dwight, whatever. Wide open. I've got some topics I want to cover. But whatever in the world, people, you can ask me my opinion about sports, and I'll see if I can give you some spiritual, redemptive comment about that. Yeah, we are wide open for all kinds of discussion today. The rare time that I'll do something like this, a holiday, different schedule, and it's an open day, I do my best to give as much flexibility, to give you opportunity. If you don't normally have the chance to call because of your schedule hours, this gives you an opportunity. So 866-348-7884. Along with your calls, I want to talk to you about this subject of where are the statesmen. I'm going to play some clips from some favorite speeches as well, and as the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's speech, I Have a Dream, was celebrated last week, you realize all the more, wow, where are civil rights leaders like Dr. King? I mean, where are the statesmen? We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, it's Labor Day, but this voice that you hear is a live voice. Looking at my clock in my studio, it is September 2nd. It is 2:07 in the afternoon, and I'm delighted to be with you live today on the program. Anything you want to talk to me about, any subject you want to raise, even if it's totally off topic of what's on my mind, we'll do it today. 866-348-7884. So over the weekend, I had a great time in Lynchburg, Virginia with, 100 or so men. It was a Messianic Jewish men's retreat. And about a three-hour drive, so I drove rather than flew and just had time alone. Good time to pray in the car driving up there. And then when I got to Virginia, well, partway along the way, I decided I was going to listen to an audiobook. I love to read, and reading, I can see things in front of me. I can grab quotes. I can copy them using ebooks. Especially, it's easy to pull quotes and copy them. I can go back and review things. So I don't listen to a lot of audiobooks. It's kind of a different way of learning. But I decided to do so, and I got a book by historian Martin Gilbert, one of the world's greatest historians, European historians. And it's about Churchill, but it's in his own words. It's excerpts from the best of the writings and speeches of Churchill, which are in chronological order, so give you an overview of his life. And I'm listening to these and thinking, whoa, this guy was amazing. His use of the English language was amazing. His penetration of speech was amazing. And he had so many near brushes with death as a soldier, as a journalist, out on the war front. That obviously deepens certain aspects of your moral courage, but he seemed to have a certain tenacity as a boy. And things I had no idea about. He's 16 years old. He's in boarding school with other British young men. And he's having a conversation with one man who recounts it many, many years ago. And this man also became a national leader. And he remembers talking to Churchill at 16 and how Churchill is telling him where he's going to be in the future and telling him how London is going to be threatened. London's going to be under attack. And this other fellow says, there's no way. It hasn't happened in ages. There's no way. And he says, it's going to happen. And he said, and I'm going to play a key role in the defense of the nation. And the other fellow says, how's that going to be? And he said, well, dreams are not always clear in terms of exactly how, but the thing's going to happen. He said, I see further into the future than others. And as I'm reading this and listening to it, and hearing the book, I started thinking, wow, the lack of statesmen in our society today. Look at the political scene. The lack of statesmen, the lack of courageous leaders with backbone, the lack of people with a strong moral courage, the lack of people who are even quotable. I mean, everything's got to be tweetable today, 140 characters or less, and these trite little empty sayings and slogans. Where are the statesmen? So Sunday, I spoke the men's meeting. I did four sessions, full sessions, and then four Q&A sessions. Finished up a little past 7:30, hopped in my car, and drove back home about 3 hours from Lynchburg, Virginia, a little over 3 hours. Got home, talked to Nancy some, and said, hey, I'm going to write. And I wrote this article, Where Are the Statesmen? So it'll be appearing online sometime tomorrow on different websites that post it. I'm going to read some of this to you. But I just want you to hear one little quote. Yeah, one of my favorite quotes, and I've tweeted this out as well. Winston Churchill, an appeaser is one who feeds a crocodile, hoping it will eat him last. Yeah, no, there are plenty, Matt. You want to start sending me Churchill quotes, we'll be here forever. You have enemies, good. That means you stood up for something sometime in your life. There was the famous interchange between another well-known woman in the country, and she said to him, if you were my husband, I would put poison in your tea. And he said, if you were my wife, I would drink it. He had another political opponent, and he said of this man, he's a very humble man with much to be humble about. But those were his biting remarks. It was his national leadership and courage that stands out to me. Now think of this for a minute. You have a leader like Ronald Reagan. He was a Hollywood actor and not one of the best Hollywood actors. Nancy and I, when our kids were growing up, rented an old Ronald Reagan movie to watch together with the family. If I'm correct, the title was Bedtime for Bonzo. Bedtime for Bonzo. One of your favorites, Joey, was it? It's about a couple, I think, with a chimpanzee or something like that. He rose above that to the point of becoming a leader who could stand down the Soviet Union. Now look, we can't figure out what to do with Syria today. It's a muddled situation. It's a terrible situation. There's horrific loss of life. Well over 100,000 people killed. You got bad versus bad, evil versus evil there in so many ways. But unfortunately, with all respect to our president, he makes the mistake of speaking before he has a clear plan of action. Now he has to reverse his steps, now get Congress involved instead of getting a consensus first and knowing what he's going to do. Charles Krauthammer referred to it as amateur hour in terms of the way the administration handled things. Other nations are now mocking America. Syria is mocking America. We don't have moral clarity in our leadership today. It's so widespread. I can't think of a single national leader that's risen above things that could be called a statesman or a stateswoman. And you think of the speech that Ronald Reagan gave, standing at the Brandenburg Gate near the Berlin Wall. Let's just listen to his most famous words from that speech.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible thing to do that as an international leader, facing down another international leader. Listen to what Reagan said. There is one sign the Soviets can make that would be unmistakable, that would advance dramatically the cause of freedom and peace. General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. You contrast that with our leadership today and you think, wow, where is the backbone? Where is the courage? Where is even the eloquence to bring a moral vision to the nation? 866-34-TRUTH, live with you on Labor Day. And anything in the world you want to talk about today is not off limits, unless it's just off limits for Christian radio. Otherwise, not off limits. Let's go to the Bronx. Glenn, welcome to the Line of Fire and happy Labor Day. Hello, Glenn. Did we lose Glenn already? Oh, all right. I was ready to jump in on the subject of deliverance ministry in the body today that Glenn wanted to talk about. So again, tomorrow, this same hour, I'll be talking to Pastor Jay Hayslip. I preached for him when he was a youth pastor in Hampton, Virginia, years back. And boy, he had a strong heart for holiness, preaching sexual purity to these kids. And he was a real soul winner. Then he invited me to speak at his congregation out in California, I think in Orange County, a few years back. And you show up there on a Sunday morning, and there are all these bikers that have come that have recently gotten saved through the ministry there. Seemed to have a real heart for the Lord. He's a skateboarder himself and had some of the famous skateboarders in his church who are now sharing the gospel and reaching out to a very lost people and lost culture. And he is on the TV show Preachers of L.A. And is he being rightly represented on the trailer? Is he going to glorify Jesus in this? Does he stand the same place as these other pastors? Does he embrace the carnal prosperity message as well? We're gonna talk about it, and you'll be able to call in. So it'll be the first hour tomorrow. Also, on Wednesday, both hours, we are going to have here with us an atheist, outspoken, but very warm, not nasty, very willing to dialogue and interact. He's a Brit, I believe, but he's living in China, and he's going to be calling in the middle of the night. We're going to spend 2 hours with Edward Falzon, and I'm going to be joined the first hour, this hour, by my friend and colleague Frank Turek, who's the co-author with Norm Geisler of the book I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. And then the second hour, my friend and colleague Dr. Alex McFarland, who has written many books, excellent books for reaching the young culture of today, and has debated atheists as well. So they're going to be on with me along with Edward Falzon, so we should have a great time together. 866-348-7884. We come back, I want to pursue this subject a little further about where are the statesmen. And tell me, do you think we have any? Do you think we have any national leaders who you can look at as men and women of backbone, courage, character, who can inspire a nation? Or are there any? Am I missing the obvious? We will be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last. Free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Welcome, friends, to this live Labor Day broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. You say, why are you doing a live show? Because I get to. This is not some job for me. Oh, yeah, we put time and effort into it and have to revolve my whole life around this travel ministry, family schedule, and all that. But it's a joy. It is a joy. It gives me an opportunity to talk to some of you that can't listen live on other days because of your work schedule, and it produces another podcast for all of our devoted podcast and internet listeners. 866-348-7884. I'm going to go to the phones in a moment. The reason I played that clip from Dr. King is not just that last week celebrated the 50th anniversary of his I Have a Dream speech, but it ties in with an article that I wrote late last night that'll be would have been online today, but with Labor Day, folks aren't posting things as much. So it'll be online sometime tomorrow at different websites. If you go to my website tomorrow, anytime during the day, and click on latest article, you'll be able to read it. It's called Where Are the Statesmen? So it'll be linked at AskDrBrown.org. I look in the civil rights movement, and I contrast Dr. King. Yes, he had his private moral failures. We understand that. That's something else I want to chat about another time, the moral failures of some great leaders. How did that affect them? But you think of him. You think of how his words are still ringing true more than 50 years after that and 45 years after his assassination. You think of how his words still convict us. Listen to some of his quotes. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Another quote from Dr. King, history will have to record that the greatest tragedy of this period of social transition was not the strident clamor of the bad people, but the appalling silence of the good people. And another quote from Hitler, from King about Hitler, never forget that everything Hitler did in Germany was legal. And then from Dr. King, never succumb to the temptation of bitterness. In conjunction with the 50th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech, you have a current civil rights leader, like Reverend Al Sharpton. This is what he says. We must give our young people dreams again. You build jails, close schools, and break their dream, and you wonder why they're wearing saggy pants. Come on, that's an insult. And that passes the blame rather than saying, hey, we're going to stand tall, and we're going to overcome difficulties, whatever's put in our way. It's such a contrast in terms of leadership, such a lack of statesmen. It seems that we just dumb things down for the generation and the soundbite culture rather than raising vision and giving moral inspiration. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Ada in Bayside, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello? Yeah, hi.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
I just wanted to say that that I find that in the midst of all the problems that Israel has, I see Bibi like a statesman. He speaks like a statesman. That's
yeah,
my comment.
Yeah, you know, within Israel, of course, he always get attacked, and things like that in the midst of the politics of Israel. But I'll tell you the truth, when he does speak, when he spoke to our Congress, I don't think of many American leaders, not many, really hardly any, come to mind that have the stature that he has, as much as he's hated in other parts of the world. So thank you for that comment. I appreciate that. 866-34-TRUTH. George in Atlanta, Georgia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
I think we have a lot of qualified statesmen with high moral qualities to run the country, but they won't run because they won't get elected. There's no chance for them to get elected.
Ah, now that's another comment. Is it because they don't play the political game, or because they don't connect well with the people? What do you think?
I think the people have a low moral quality. They're not worrying about morals, but they're worrying about maybe their job or something economic.
Got it. Yeah, you know, I certainly understand that issue. Tell me someone that comes to mind that you think is a real statesman or stateswoman, but just can't get elected.
Well, I thought that McCain could have been a good president with fairly high moral qualities. I wouldn't give him the top grade, but I think he would have done a good job.
All right, George, I appreciate that. You know, look, we certainly respect the years that Senator McCain has given to America, and we respect his suffering as a prisoner of war that's marked him for life. But I don't see a clear moral leadership with him in other ways. When it comes down to standards of marriage and family, I don't hear a clear voice. Even in the war with Syria, it's so strange that his recent comments, get the right weapons to the right people, we can turn this around. Oh, it's not that difficult. These are good people. I was in Syria with them, and to say that we can't get the right weapons to the right people, frankly, is a cop-out. The people he wants to get the weapons to have close connections with Al-Qaeda and are committing atrocities against Christians. Again, it just seems we don't have moral clarity in our whole government today in so many ways. I'm not castigating everyone. I'm just saying it's such a lack. Really, who is it that speaks to the nation and talks about the past and knows history in such a way that they present a vision for the future? Look, there's a picture now of Secretary of State John Kerry that's getting a lot of internet circulation, having an intimate dinner with his wife and Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria. Along with his wife, they seem to be having a very close conversation in 2009. This is a man that Kerry is now likened to Hitler and Saddam Hussein. Well, where was the moral judgment back then? Was he rebuking him back then? All right, we got a lot to talk about. I've got some other sound bites to play for you. I want to talk about endurance, some lessons from endurance swimmer Diana Nyad. What an accomplishment. You can imagine. And I want to take your calls on a wide range of subjects to answer some of your emails. Also today, go to my website when you have a chance. Go to AskDrBrown.org, and you'll see one of the slides. You have a few slides that's just come through. You'll see that one of them has a special resource offer. This will be the last day it's online. You can download my entire teaching series on how to be led by the Spirit, how to know the Spirit's voice, how to walk in greater intimacy with God and understand His direction and guidance. It's an entire teaching series. Normally on CD, it's $20 plus postage, but you can download it in its entirety, 12 hours, for just $10. So go online, take advantage of that. That's AskDrBrown.org. You'll see it right there on the homepage, the special resource offer. And we are really excited about our trip to Israel, which is getting closer by the day. It's May 20th to 30th of next year, but now is the time to sign up. There's a banner right there on the homepage. So find out about the Israel tour, and if you want to go, get your deposit in. We're going to have an extraordinary time with an extraordinary team that's going to be accompanying you throughout the land.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on this Labor Day. Join the family a little bit before the broadcast. Had a couple little burgers from the cookout. Came over here and then, well, going to make up for some of the trash talk with my 9-year-old grandson, Andrew. He's going on 10 now, but I'm 58. I would say if he's like 60-something pounds, I'm almost four times his weight. And whatever height he is, I'm close to 6'3", but he's been trash talking me. I told him he's going down. We're playing some wiffle ball after the show. It's like coming away live on this Labor Day. And yeah, my suspicions are confirmed. You're all out there listening. Our phone lines are jammed on Labor Day. 866-348-7884. I want to talk to you about whatever in the world is on your mind and a couple of things on my mind today, one of which is the lack of real statesman leaders in our nation today. People with moral courage, moral backbone, and eloquence as well to speak in a way that inspires like a Churchill did, like a Lady Thatcher did, on a certain level like a Ronald Reagan did. There's a lack of examples for the younger generation. And you say, well, they're not looking for this. Well, yes and no. It is a soundbite generation. It is an ADD generation. I can fall into that just being constantly connected and on internet and emails and messages and just constantly distracted. It's the way of a generation of all ages. Yet I believe with the younger generation that they are looking for figures of stability and strength and courage that they can follow as well. 866-34-TRUTH. On the subject of statesmen, before we go to some of your Bible-related comments and questions, let's go to Washington, D.C. Herta, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Well, I was thinking of your question, and the only one that comes to mind at this point is Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, you know, I think you raise a good point. When I saw his name come up on my screen there, I think he's got the moral backbone, and he's known as a no-compromise guy. Let me ask you this, though, and this is, I'm a fan of Huckabee, not a critic. I was disappointed when he didn't run for president.
Right.
But this is a question for you. I'm not being critical. He can also be a very down-to-earth kind of guy. You know, he gets on his TV show and he plays bass guitar, you know, with a band and things like that. And again, not being critical, do you feel that he has enough power in his words, in his speech, in his person to kind of inspire the way a statesman would? You know, you have that seniority, that sense of even though you're with the people, you're kind of a step ahead. Do you think he has that in him, or perhaps he could emerge into that? What's your feeling?
I feel that he could probably merge into that. I think I believe what you're saying is correct. I think one of the last greatest statesmen as far as their speech is concerned would be Ronald Reagan. Even, I mean, George Bush was a good president, but he just didn't have that ability to stand before people and speak and inspire. And to me, a leader is able to be the visionary of the country and be able to speak out his vision, and then he gets the people to follow him by following through on all of the administrative ends of that. And I think the last great one was really Ronald Reagan. He was awesome. The other thing I noticed, too, is nowadays the young people, because I'm your age, I'll be 60 in November, the young people today are just not given, you talk to any of them about what's going on in the country today, they're clueless. They don't care. They're clueless. They're not being taught a lot of these things in school today. So I don't know who we're raising in our schools today.
The other thing, Herta, that's interesting, I was talking to a friend of mine, a black pastor, and he was saying with his generation, you could speak about the example of Martin Luther King, or look, we paid a certain price for our freedom, and it had meaning. He said, now you talk to some young kid on the street, the way they're dressing or acting, and talk about Dr. King's example, they don't know about it or care about it. It's a crisis throughout our culture. You're right. Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, it's Labor Day, but we're here live. Call us. Anything you want to talk about. The most off-topic subject imaginable. If you want to talk to me about it, get my take on it. If I've got something worthwhile to say, I'll say it. 866-348-7884. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Tons of stuff if you've never visited my website. Literally thousands of hours of free material, audio, video, and articles to read. AskDrBrown.org. Before I go back to your calls, when I was talking about Mike Huckabee and could he rise up into the level of a statesman, he's been a respected political leader. He's now a TV host. He speaks out in different ways. He's known for his strong family and moral biblical values and seems like a genuinely nice guy. Could he rise up to the level of statesman? And Chuck and Poughkeepsie, stay there. I want to talk to you about your question. I want to get to your question in a moment, sir. But comments were made about Ronald Reagan, and I mentioned in the first half hour of the show today, I mentioned how he rose above being a Hollywood actor and not one of the biggest, best A-level Hollywood actors. He rose above that, governor of California, then president of the United States, and then he took on a statesman level and he faced down the Soviet Union and he didn't blink and he called on Mikhail Gorbachev to tear down the Berlin Wall. But as I said, we brought home a movie to watch one time. Bedtime for Bonzo. I thought that was the correct name, and Matt verified it for us. 1951, where Ronald Reagan and his wife have a chimpanzee named Bonzo. I remember we were watching that. Nancy and I watched that with our girls, thinking this was the president of the United States. But yeah, Bedtime for Bonzo. This is what it's about.
Serious new Hollywood movie called Bedtime for Bonzo, starring Ronald Reagan, Diana Lynn, and Bonzo, that amazing chimp.
Ooh. It's a monkey.
Well, sure it's a monkey.
Why didn't you tell me?
I did.
It's the funniest film idea since Francis. Bedtime for Bonzo, the comedy hit of the year.
Yeah, so the president rose above that. Bedtime for Bonzo history. So you can rise up into a position of being a statesman or a stateswoman. You can rise up to that level of respect and respectability that carries over to others. Winston Churchill, whose book I was listening to, an audiobook by Martin Gilbert, Churchill in His Own Words, I found out that when I was not aware of this, when President Kennedy made Churchill an honorary American citizen, April 63, Kennedy said of him, "In the dark days and darker nights when Britain stood alone, and most men, save Englishmen, despaired of England's life, he mobilized the English language and sent it into battle." Churchill mobilized the English language and sent it into battle. Kennedy said the incandescent quality of his words illuminated the courage of his countrymen. And I was thinking, who do we have like that today, whose words are not just smooth and slick, but have a certain moral power, a moral authority? Some of Churchill's famous quotes: success is not final, failure is not fatal, it is the courage to continue that counts. And also in war, resolution; in defeat, defiance; in victory, magnanimity. Maybe his best known words, especially in the context of war and conflict: never give in, never, never, never. And nothing great or small, large or petty, never gave in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force, never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy. I thought, boy, do we need voices like that today. Let's go to Chuck in Poughkeepsie, New York. Chuck, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Yeah, good afternoon. I listen to your program from time to time.
But your definition of statements are interesting. But let me say this to you. You know, you guys tend to worship Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan had many faults. Number one, you know, you have a president now who is facing a lot of difficulties. And if you compare him to Reagan in terms of derivation, he too came from an unknown background to become president. But when Ronald Reagan became president, he traded weapons for hostages against the law of the United States, number one. Number two, Reagan, 323 Marines were blown up in Lebanon. What did Reagan do? He ran. He never defended those Marines. And we know of other lies that Reagan told. Now, my point is simply this. When people are, when men occupy that office, the times define them. Mm-hmm. And right now, Obama is facing his time. And he did something over the weekend that I think all presidents should do. Go before the people. Have the guts to take your case before the American people before you put their sons and daughters in the center for fighting and losing their lives. This is the first time.
Let me tell you what I have a problem with. Can I be honest with you?
Sure. This is what the discussion is about.
Yeah. Good. Good. When you made the statement about certain people almost worship Ronald Reagan. First thing is, I very rarely mention his name. That's the first thing. And I'm not a conservative political talk show host.
Well, I spoke pejorative. I said we.
Okay. Right, right. So I don't know who the we was, but I wish you would turn the same lens of criticism that you have on Ronald Reagan on Mr. Obama. Because of the atrocious things that Mr. Obama's done to campaign aggressively for Planned Parenthood and the slaughter of millions of babies in the womb, and to say God bless Planned Parenthood, to use his office as the president to intimidate others to say we're going to push forth same-sex marriage, those are abominable, horrific things. And then to foolishly state things before he had gone to Congress, and now America looks like a mess in the eyes of the people. I'm not a super extoller of Ronald Reagan. I felt there were certain things he did that really were statesmanlike, that really did inspire and have courage, and he was able to face down the Soviet Union. But I'm all for critiquing him. I've got no issue with that. He's a man with clay feet, and he had a strong moral stand on pro-life, without doubt. He stood rightly on that. But I am not one that's going to sign my name in the Ronald Reagan worshiper book. But I wish you'd have the same standard towards Mr. Obama, because he's done atrocious, abominable things that no president's ever done before.
Well, let me respond to your statement about that. And some things you with regard to homosexual marriage, I agree with you wholeheartedly as a Christian. Number two, comparing Reagan to Obama, since you seem to want to use that standard, Reagan ran on a pro-life position, but he never did anything about it. Not one law was put into position by Ronald Reagan with regard to being anti-abortion.
You sure about that?
Name me one law that he wrote or that he put in position to...
We'll get him for it. Actually, he passed a lot of legislation. Unfortunately, it didn't bring about a lot of change, but he did pass a lot of legislation.
He never passed one law, sir. I'm telling you, not one thing changed with regard to abortion under Ronald Reagan.
That's actually not accurate. He stood strongly. But by the way, if we'll go back and review the tape, but I believe that you said you guys almost worship Ronald Reagan. That's where I took exception. You guys, you went back and said we, but I think you said you guys, so you put me in a certain category unfairly. That was my issue, Chuck.
My intention was not to offend you in any way.
Okay,
but when you listen
I appreciate
to,
that.
When you listen to conservatives, and I'm a Republican, must I qualify, but when you listen to some of my conservative friends, they worship at Ronald Reagan's throne,
mm-hmm.
and they want to choose the good things that he has done, which have been some good things, but they want to negate and ignore all of the bad thing which has affected
Fair
the
enough.
Country.
Fair enough.
So Reagan has a tremendous impact on this country with regard to some bad events. Iran-Contra, you know, if he had not traded weapons for those people in Iran, I don't know where we would have been today. We could have probably been in a better position with Iran. But the point being is that we are always elevating him beyond the myth. We elevate him to the mythological position, and a lot of those things that we are giving him credit for, he's not deserving of it.
Chuck, I'll let others defend Reagan. My only issue is that I would urge you to use the same canon of criticism on Mr. Obama.
I just said to you, I agree with you with regard to some of the things Obama has done. I agree. Morally, I have, and being a Christian, I have some difficulty that I wrestle when I support him. I do agree with you. But the point being is that he's also, like all presidents, he has done some great things for this country. So we can't choose the good and throw out the bad.
Right. And just real quick, we got a break coming. Tell me what you think is the best thing he's done for the country.
Well, number one, he stopped two wars. He's brought two wars to a grind, number one.
Okay. All right. Chuck, got to go. But thank you, sir, for the call. Thank you for expressing your view. I'll let others chime in if you like about the war issue. But, Chuck, sir, another more time, thank you for expressing your viewpoint. Appreciate it.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Now, I'm looking at the news here. Diana Nyad, 64 years old. It's her fourth attempt, and she conquered the Straits of Florida. First person to swim from Cuba to Florida without a shark cage. 53 hours in the water. It's her fifth try. How do you do that? Wow. Michael Brown, live with you on Labor Day. I really appreciate the last caller calling as a regular listener to differ with me. So, Chuck, if you're still there, thanks, man. I appreciate it. That's, as you said, that's what it's for, to have honest interaction. You see, I'm not a conservative political talk show host. I'm a follower of Jesus. I'm on the air to be your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. That's why we do what we do. If I'm conservative in politics on a certain level, it's because of conservative moral values I hold to based on being a follower of Jesus. But I'm not, for example, a card-carrying member of the NRA. You know, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying I don't relate to certain things. So I believe that President Reagan really had certain statesman-like qualities that he could speak with a dignity and a character and a moral backbone and could face down the Soviet Union. But if someone wants to find fault with him on different levels, I'm not here to defend him. I just want there to be equal standards to compare to others, like Mr. Obama or Mr. Bush or other presidents. 866-348-7884. All right. On random questions, the phone lines are wide open right now. We've got one line open if you want to try to get in, 866-34-TRUTH. Anything under the sun you want to talk to me about, sports or weather, if I can say something constructive, I'm glad to do it. I've got a few other things I want to talk to you about today on the air. Let's go to Jenny in Brooklyn. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, the question is, hi, good day, Dr. Brown. Concerning, like, listening as opposed to reading the Bible, if you do more listening, the effectiveness of it as opposed to reading.
Yes, everybody learns differently. That's the first thing to understand. Some people learn better reading. Some people learn better listening. Some people learn better if they can, you know, sing something, put it to music. Some people learn better if they can conceptualize it and see it in picture form. So everybody has different methods of learning. But generally speaking, when you are listening, that is more on the macro, larger level. In other words, when you're listening, you're not likely to keep going back and replaying and stop, replay, stop, replay. You're going to be listening, so you're going to get the full flow. If you just want to listen to the Bible and take it in and hear the word, so that you're getting the bird's eye view, the macro, the larger view, that's great. But if you're going to be doing careful study, you've got to be reading it, because you want to be looking at the text. You want to, dissecting it. Now I stop here. I want to compare it to this passage. I want to go back here. I want to stop and take some notes. So listening is a completely different dynamic. I don't normally listen a lot to books, but as I was driving to Virginia listening to some of Churchill's quotes, some of Churchill's writings, I was stirred. I mean, the power, it was so eloquent. It painted pictures. But I also wanted to stop and pull out quotes and use them for writing. And I couldn't do that. So it's a different type of learning. Now, something that's done in Jewish circles, the yeshiva rabbinic schools, is that they will learn out loud. They're constantly speaking the text and repeating it, but they can be going over and over it. So if you can read it and then speak it and then see it as well in different forms, that's the best way to get it internalized, to memorize it. But again, listening is great to get the scope, to get the flow, to get the feel. Reading is a better way if you're going to be doing more intensive study and really trying to take it in and dig deeper. All right?
Okay, then. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And again, it's different for everybody. Different for everybody. 866-348-7884. Rick in Payson, Arizona. Thanks so much for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I just wanted to get your interpretation of 1 Corinthians 6, verses 2 and 3. This is a scripture that I need a little insight on, and I just don't quite understand it. So if you could interpret that, if you can give me your view on that, I'd appreciate it. 1
Surely.
Corinthians 6, verses 2 and 3.
Right. So the context, Paul is talking about judging. It's a context that a word that comes up often in 1 Corinthians, the second chapter, the fourth chapter, the fifth chapter, the sixth, and elsewhere. And in the sixth chapter, he's now talking about the issue of if you have disputes between yourselves, do you dare take it before the ungodly for judgment instead of before the Lord's people? Or do you not know that the Lord's people will judge the world? And if you were to judge the world, are you not competent to judge trivial cases? Do you not know that you will judge angels? How much more things of this life? So Paul is telling us that in the world to come, that we will actually sit together with him and pass judgment. It's an extraordinary statement, but that angels who have sinned and fallen, that we will be together with the Lord passing judgment on their guilt and passing judgment apparently on others. It says we'll judge the world. So therefore, we should be able to figure out issues. If Brother Smith says Brother Jones owes him money and he's going to take him to court, we say, no, don't take him to court. We're believers. We don't want to look bad before the world. So come here, we'll settle it. So we don't have a lot of information as to how it's going to happen. This is one of the few passages. But apparently we will be involved together with the Lord. In Matthew, the 19th chapter, Jesus tells his disciples there, speaking about the 12 tribes of Israel, verse 28, truly I tell you, at the renewal of all things, when the Son of Man sits on his glorious throne, you who have followed me will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. So somehow, it's a very weighty and intensive thing, Rick, to think about. Intense thing to think about. That we will one day be responsible for pronouncing judgment either on people or on angels together with the Lord. So that's something to chew on. Rick, maybe I'll come back to that passage another day. Got to run, but it says what it says. It's as simple and clear as it seems to be. That's what it says. So thank you, sir, for the call. All right, friends, I've got another hour of radio, even if I'm leaving you in your particular city or location, which means if you want to get in on the program, call now, 866-348-7884, and we'll be taking your call shortly after the break. I've got some more sound bites to play for you. My article, Where the Statesman, should be out on several different websites tomorrow morning. So just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, click on latest article. And remember, this same hour, 2 to 3 Eastern Standard Time, tomorrow, Tuesday's broadcast, I'll be talking with Pastor Jay Hayslip, one of the featured pastors on the Preachers of L.A. reality TV show that has a lot of people up in arms already. We'll hear firsthand from Pastor Jay tomorrow. Friends, if you appreciate the work we're doing and you want to stand with us, go to my website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on Donate. Help us with our Jewish outreach on TV. Help us with this radio ministry across the nation. Help us as we raise up and support workers to send to the ends of the earth. My bottom line today, God is looking for people of dignity, of gravity, of honor, of courage, who can stand and speak and inspire a nation. Well, it's Labor Day, but I'm coming your way live, and I've got a lot on my mind. Ready to talk to you today, right here on the Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, maybe you're enjoying a nice cookout with the family. I did that earlier. Going to rejoin in a little while. But right now it's radio time, and I am here live with you on Labor Day. You say, oh, you couldn't find a repeat broadcast to play? Well, why play a repeat broadcast when I can be here live? It's my joy. I love being on the radio with you. It's a special time every day for me, 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. Your listener-sponsored voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Glad to be with you today. And we've opened up the phone lines to anything in the world you want to talk about, any subject you want to talk about whatsoever, even if it doesn't relate to the Line of Fire at all, even if anything that I can add a constructive comment to, I'll do my best. We'll have some fun. And I want to continue something I started last hour. My question, where are the statesmen? Where are the national political leaders with moral backbone, courage, with a voice that inspires, who know the past, who can lead us clearly into the future? It just seems there's a real dearth of them today. 866-348-7884. I also want to talk to you a little bit about perseverance and courage. In fact, let me do that right now. I didn't even know this was happening until, I guess, into the event itself, but endurance swimmer Diana Nyad, this is her fifth attempt to swim the Straits of Florida without using a shark cage. Others have done it with a shark cage, so you're swimming within this giant cage, but apparently that helps a little bit. There's a bit of a drift in the water that helps propel you a little bit. If you don't have the sharks, they'll have a team of boats around you, and they've got these electrical probes that'll keep sharks away. But then you've got the jellyfish. Last time, the jellyfish bites in her mouth are just too much, and she had to stop jellyfish bites on her body. 64 years old. Come on, think of that. She couldn't do it when she was in her 20s. She's 64. She said this is going to be her last chance trying to do it. She's in the water almost 53 hours. Jumps in the ocean in Havana. This is her fifth try in 35 years. And she did it. She finished. This is her fourth attempt since she turned 60. Here's a report I'm reading on CNN. The first four tries were marked by gut-wrenching setbacks. If the rough, strength-sapping seas didn't force her to quit, an hours-long asthma attack or paralyzing, excruciating jellyfish stings did. But for this swim, beside donning a suit meant to protect her against her jellyfish nemesis, she wore a special mask to prevent jellyfish stings to her tongue, a key factor in her failed attempt last year. She made it. How do you swim that long? How do you stay up that long? How do you persevere? But, you know, look, that's why everybody's talking about it now. That's why her website's getting flooded with hits. That's why people are going to be talking about this for years to come. And there's a lesson for us. You're not going to see the real breakthroughs without endurance. You're not going to see the things you long to see in God without endurance. You're not going to see the breakthroughs you want to see. You're not going to see the changes you want to see without endurance. There needs to be courage. There needs to be a steadfast determination. I am putting my hand to the plow, and I'm not looking back until I reach my destination. Friends, people of God, we have need of endurance. Back with your calls. We'll talk about where are the statesmen.
Change the world. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to Labor Day Live right here on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. One of our greatest statesmen in history, of course, was President Lincoln. He was the least educated, in terms of formal education, the least educated of all of our presidents. And also a man who had a lot of political defeat before he rose up to the presidency. And he took over at a time of horrific national crisis. Here are some of his most famous words, not an actual recording, but someone else speaking some of Lincoln's most famous words.
That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
You know, obviously we can't exaggerate people's greatness or failings as the times go on. I've watched some people, when they look, say, in church history, they'll look at past things God did, and they will sanitize them as if they're wonderful and perfect, and then present things happen, and they'll demonize them. We can easily do that. Familiarity breeds contempt. We're around someone, something, it's like, ah, it's nothing. We read about that same person two generations later. Oh, they were amazing. That can easily happen. Someone's reputation can get blown out of all proportion, positively or negatively. I'm just convinced that we have a terrible dearth of statesmen, leaders in our midst today. Hence my article, Where Are the Statesmen?, that will be posted online tomorrow. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones. Chris in Boston, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello?
Yes. Hello, Chris. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. How you doing? It's Dr. Brown. Nice to speak to you. I came in halfway through your show. The last hour, I didn't really get a lot of it, but I heard that comment when the lady was saying that our youth nowadays are uninformed. They just don't care. They don't know what's going on in the country. I do agree with that. But I want to comment on the comment of the other guys at the end of the show about Obama and Ronald Reagan.
Yes, there was just for those tuning in now, Chris, there was a caller, Chuck from Poughkeepsie, who identified as a Republican, as a regular listener, but said that conservatives basically worship at the feet of Ronald Reagan, and went on to criticize Reagan on a number of fronts, and then was speaking well of President Obama, or basically saying, look, he's done certain things, great things for the nation, and we have to judge him against his time. And I said my issue with him was that he was not using the same canon of criticism with Ronald Reagan as with Barack Obama. So that was the discussion we had. So your comments to add to that, please.
Yes, I do agree that as a Christian, we don't stand for one political party. We stand for Christ, and we believe that only Christ can save this country. But I agree that Obama's moral standard, to me, has kind of iffy for me because, you know, how can you say you done good things, but then again, he is pushing Planned Parenthood. He stands for homosexuality, which me, as a president, kind of iffy and goes against what America has been established, because if we all understand and know that America was established on the biblical Christian worldview, maybe not all first presidents were Christians, but they all understand the biblical view and they all had a morality in accordance to what the Bible has said. So for the caller to say, you know, that Obama has done things, I haven't seen really what Obama has done good to this country. You know, here he is, he wants to fight a war in Syria, which we don't even know who the enemy is. And also, you know, Detroit is falling apart completely, and he hasn't said anything about Detroit or trying to help this the state of Detroit. So I haven't really seen anything good that Obama has done, in my view. Maybe we'll see down the line in the road, but for me, I do not see anything good that Obama has done. I see that he supports Planned Parenthood, who kills babies a day by the thousands, and he called that basketball player who came out as he was homosexual, and he commended him from that, trying to push that agenda in our youth. And it's, to me, it's sad to see that, that our youth who are uninformed support Obama because they don't know what he's doing behind closed doors and in the media. And it's sad that our youth are uninformed and don't know what's going on in the presidency. And
yeah, and I think, Chris, there's a superficial level of information. In other words, people mm-hmm. have information, but it's not thought through. It's not digested. So I would contrast, say, Mr. Obama tweeting out love is love when the Supreme Court says they're going to overthrow DOMA, saying love is love, and tweeting that out as if, here, we're going to redefine marriage. And that is supposedly some profound quote. And you contrast that with the words of statesmen, leaders in the past that use their words to stir and inspire and convict. And again, I'm not a conservative political talk show host. That's why Mr. Obama's name will not occur on this show often for weeks and weeks on end, because I'm not here doing a conservative political show. And you won't hear Ronald Reagan's name coming up a lot. I commend it, Mr. Reagan, for having the statesman qualities to stand down the Soviet Union and to call on Mikhail Gorbachev to tear down this wall. And yet we seem to be, our whole administration, so much in Congress, the leadership does so little to gain the respect of the nation and the respect of foreign nations as well. That certainly brings great concern. Thanks for the call, Chris. Where is the moral backbone? 866-348-7884. And again, I appreciated Chuck calling because he differed with me, and he differed with me with a lot of information at his fingertips. And one thing I took exception to was the idea that Reagan was elected as a strong pro-life candidate, but then actually did nothing in terms of legislation in any way, that he did nothing to further the cause in terms of legislation. He did sign a bill when he was governor of California in 68, which he regretted signing afterwards, said he made a mistake because it had certain provisions intact that opened the door for abortions that he wanted to outlaw, actually. And he said in 76, as a presidential candidate, I wouldn't make the same mistake again. He said, I've done more soul-searching and studying on the subject than anything else in my 8 years as governor. So he was elected as president as a strong pro-life candidate. He wrote a book as president. Think of this. He wrote a book called Abortion and the Conscience of a Nation. How rare is that for a sitting president to write a book on a controversial moral issue and to take a stand? And then he put the Mexico City policy into place, which cut off taxpayer funding of groups that promoted and performed abortions in other nations, which saved, according to pro-life reports, millions of lives in the decades since. So that would be a major thing just there. And if you've got issues with it, that's fine, because I'm not Mr. Republican, nor am I Mr. Reagan Revolution. I'm simply saying the statesman quality, that dignity, that honor, that ability to speak with moral conviction, that ability to stand with clarity and to face down foreign nations, and they know that we back our words, we're lacking that. Sadly, sadly, we are. All right, to the phones. Peter in Boston, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Brown, once again. Thank you for your show, and God continue pouring out blessings upon this ministry. A question, I have actually two questions. The first one, how can I be transparent walking away from a church, but at the same time I cannot be transparent walking away from a church, but at the same time, yet when I go to another church, when people ask me, I feel like, I still use the, since I don't have a church home yet, I still use the old church as the representative of the main church that I go to. That's number one. And the second question, the other question I have, I don't know if you understand it, but the other question I have, I also used to play a role at the church, like a youth minister, to be a youth minister. And my heart really, it's like a burden for me when I cannot go, I mean, when I see that the kid, I mean, the youth are out.
Right, the kids are hurting and you can't help them. All right, Peter, stay there. I'm going to answer both your questions as best as I can on the other side of the break. I still have more to say about the statesman issue. Feel free to weigh in on that. Are there statesmen out there? Can you name for me a statesman-level leader in our nation?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to our live on Labor Day broadcast. Michael Brown, thank you so much for joining us. 866-348-7884. Along with the subject of where are the statesman leaders in our society today, I'm taking your calls on anything in the world, anything you want to talk about. I mean, it may be something I've got nothing constructive to offer, but I'll give it a shot. 866-34-TRUTH. So, Peter, in Boston, your two questions about how to leave a church respectfully, and then when you've had ministry involvement with young people, and now you see them not doing well, and you can't be involved the way you used to, what do you do? In terms of the second question, Peter, you just have to commit to pray for them. If you feel you have to step away from that church, you have certain differences with them, certain issues, certain things that you cannot affirm or say amen to, because of which you have to step away, then you just have to entrust those young people to the Lord. You have to pray that God will raise up other solid leaders for them. You have to pray that if they're really in a place of deception or harm, that God will bring them somewhere else. And you have to leave that with the Lord. You have to remember that there are tons of people out there that are struggling, and you can't help everybody. And it's hard, but just really commit to pray for them like never before. Okay. The other thing, as far as leaving respectfully, you want to do your best not to be a source of division, slander, gossip. And even if you know certain things, it doesn't mean the whole world has to know. If a group is actually teaching error and they have become a cult, they're no longer teaching the word, then it's obviously important to talk to leaders wherever you go and say, I think you need to know the truth about this church. Would you please look into it? Because they now preach this, 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 and this. But let's just say they're believers, but you have a difference. You don't feel you can stay there in good conscience. Then you just say, the Lord was calling me out. Why'd you leave there? Well, my time there was done. I felt the Lord was calling me out. Yeah. But why really? No, my time was done. I felt the Lord was calling me out. And I feel drawn to be part of this church here. And that's the way you do it. You don't need to say, well, let me just tell you what goes on behind the scene with that church, with the way they handle finances. Oh, well, let me just tell you, you know, when I see hypocrisy, or it's not for others to know that, you're not to be the ambassador for it. And if you've been hurt and wronged or misrepresented, if they've spoken evil of you, the highest level to take is to bless and to trust the Lord to vindicate you. If it's important to involve others, then you can share with the church you go to and say, hey, I want you to know some charges have been brought against me. There's nothing to them. But if you want to look into that, that's fine. And then you best thing is to move on with dignity and grace, and you won't regret it years later if you do that. So, Peter, that's my counsel. We're just getting some feedback here, so I've just got to take you off live. But that's my counsel to you. Most all of us have had to walk through that at one time or another. And the less you say, the more grace you walk with, the better it tends to be long term. And remember, it's not your battle. It's not your battle. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Joe in Fort Worth, Texas.
Hi, yes. y'all have evidently heard about the outbreak of measles in Fort Worth.
I didn't know in Fort Worth. I had read about an outbreak of measles. So if you say Fort Worth, I'd take your word for it, sir.
Yeah, they're in Fort Worth at Kenneth Copeland Church.
Oh, okay.
Well, anyway, my question to you, and also I guess my statement would be, since 23 of the licensed vaccines contain aborted fetal tissue, where do you draw the line on whether or not it's, since he made the statement, after making the statement before, that he thinks vaccines cause autism, now he told the congregation the other day to pray to God for the wonderful invention of vaccines, you know, and thanking for them. And to me, where do you draw the line? I mean, if there's 23 of the licensed vaccines contain aborted fetal tissue, it's okay to abort these as long as you put it into a vaccine. That doesn't make a bit of sense.
Right. Well, Joe, first thing, I'm not expert in it, but I have read about it. And some students or grads in our ministry school asked the question about vaccinations because of having kids and were wondering about it. And as I've looked at it in terms of pro-life groups, obviously they are fighting, they are standing and calling on the medical companies to eliminate the tainted products that have any aborted fetal tissue of any kind involved. So, I mean, that's one thing that can be done. The question is, how widespread is it? You gave a certain percent. Is that across the board? Is that for all vaccines? And I'm just looking right now, for example, a Right to Life website from Michigan, which simply says everyone needs to know the facts surrounding the vaccines to make decisions. I don't know that I can give you a simple answer, sir, to be honest. If you say, okay, we're not going to vaccinate, obviously certain things are legal, so then that are required by law, so then it ups the ante even more in terms of your actions. But to say we're not going to vaccinate because there's the possibility of aborted fetal tissue being part of the vaccination, and we're not going to do that, we're not going to mingle with that culture of death, or to say, listen, we know that this is actually going to save lives, and chances are there's nothing to do with abortion in it. It's a personal decision that needs to be made. I would tend to go the way of hoping that the vaccination is going to do its job and that there's no connection with this culture of death and abortion. But I'm not qualified to give a definitive answer, Joe. I've only researched the subject a little bit. Perhaps someone listening has looked at it more and would like to contribute some thoughts to our listening audience. So thanks for raising it. It's definitely something we're going to have to consider more. Thank you for the call. I wish I could be more definitive, but I would rather say less than say more. 866-348-7884. In the church, do we have statesman leaders? In the body today, do we have national voices that speak with that moral quality, that courage, conviction? We'll talk about it more. Friends, last day to do this, go to my website, askdrbrown.org. As soon as you have a minute, go there today. And you'll see, the first or second slide that comes up on the home page, big and clear, a special resource offer. It's the last day. We extended it one extra day. My entire teaching series on how to be led by the Holy Spirit, 12 hours of teaching, clear, biblically based, how to understand God's voice and be led and walk with Him more closely and intimately, what is right, what's not right in terms of what we should expect. You'll find it very edifying, helpful. It's on CD. It's only $20 plus postage, but you can download the entire 12-hour series for just $10. So do that today. Last day to do it at AskDrBrown.org, right on the homepage.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to this live on Labor Day radio broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Boy, radio normally goes fast, but this first hour and a half has flown by. Our phone lines have been jammed. We're taking calls on a wide range of subjects, as well as focusing on the issue of where are the statesmen. An article I wrote late last night, I do most of my writing late at night, and it'll be posted sometime tomorrow. So to read the article, which I believe will inspire you and raise vision, as well as have you saying, "Yeah, oh, boy, we're missing something. We're missing something, this generation." Article, Where are the Statesmen? You can read it tomorrow by going to AskDrBrown.org, clicking on latest article. By the way, if you follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, then as soon as the article's out, we'll post it. You'll know about it. You'll be able to read it and share it with others. So to get in on the program, to join the conversation, 866-348-7884. Wednesday's broadcast, we will be interviewing an outspoken but nice guy, atheist, Edward Falzon, talking about his issues with God and the Bible. And I'll have some special guests, some believers who've debated atheists, on the air with me. It should be a great show. British historian Martin Gilbert said this of Winston Churchill: throughout his six decades in the public eye and in public life, he understood and wielded the power of words. Churchill used words for different purposes: to argue for moral and political causes, to advocate courses of action in the social, national, international spheres, and to tell the story of his own life and that of Britain and its place in the world. And I ask the question, who among our current national leaders, in particular in the political sphere, is in the same universe as Churchill? Who among them is utilizing the power of words to inspire the populace to build a vision of the future by telling the story of the past, to raise a standard of moral excellence? Can you name 1-866-348-7884. Let's go to Will in Palmetto, Florida. Thanks, Will, for calling the line of fire.
Thank you for having the program. My question is along the same lines as you began your program, at least the hour that I'm listening to. Where are the statesmen? I've been curious, and it could be the fact that I'm kept so busy working to pay the bills that I'm just not able to run into all of it on the radio or the television or in my hometown or whatever. But I'm sort of curious, where is the church leading the soldiers of this war that we're fighting? Where are they calling us all to one prayer for the Lord's intervention? I see everyone maintaining their own agenda, but I don't really see a calling of the troops, a rallying of the soldiers, and it concerns me greatly, especially when I see presidents voted again that didn't do the job the first time, didn't keep their promises the first time, and I'm just at 67. I'm not wearing down. I'm standing strong. The Lord is faithful. He is our rock. But I would like to see the statesmen standing up that are morally fibered, and the church leaders that are rallying the troops. Your comment. Thank you.
Yeah, Will, I absolutely agree that there's a dearth of statesman-type leadership in the church as well. For example, if you think of the esteem that a Billy Graham had on a national level, and then you say, who do we have today that walks in his footsteps? His son Franklin Graham is a terrific leader and continues to rise up in many ways, but he's not Billy Graham. And a nationally respected man like Rick Warren, he's not Billy Graham. And you think, wow, there is really a lack there in the church of people that have, through years of service and moral integrity and bringing an uncompromised message, they're either loved or hated by the nation, but they carry a certain level of respect. Where are they? That perhaps is the biggest need of all.
Oh God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to be very clear. There are definitely respected leaders in the body. There are definitely men and women of integrity and moral courage. They don't have the same national stature with that that a Dr. Billy Graham had. Michael Brown, coming your way live on Labor Day, something that's been on my mind. We've thought about this. Nancy and I have often talked about it. Where are the statesmen leaders today? But driving to speak at a Messianic men's retreat, had about a three-hour drive in each direction, and I wanted to take advantage of the time just to be alone in the car to pray and then to listen to an audio book. And it was the life of Winston Churchill in his own words. And I was just so stirred by his eloquence and by his clarity of vision and by the clarity of moral statements and political statements he was making. And I thought, I know he was also one of a kind in certain ways and obviously an imperfect man as well. But such a lack of that. Everything gets just brought down to the tweetable level, to the soundbite level. We need leaders who can reach this younger generation and reach our superficial culture and transcend it and bring people higher. Looking at this statement on the four qualities of a true statesman, number one, bedrock of principles. Number two, moral compass. Number three, a vision. Number four, the ability to build a consensus to achieve that vision. It's a great statement. Matt, those four qualities, whose were they? I found them, but don't know who it was that put them forth. But those are great. I think that's part of what a statesman is and part of what a statesman does. Let's go to Roger in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I'm concerned about the decision that President Obama is about to make about going into Syria, to bomb Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also concerned also about the decisions that's been made by some of the courts around the country and the Supreme Court and the same-sex marriage. I am really concerned about thinking that God may have lifted his hand of protection off the United States. And if that be the case, what will the repercussions be if they go in and they think they can go in for just a short period of time and fire off a few bombs and so forth, and that will be it? Well, after that, we aren't calling the shots the way I see it. They will be calling the shots then to decide what they want to do. And there are several other countries over there that could go in with them. And it's hard telling what it may turn into be. And also, I'm thinking that Russia and China are laying low, maybe waiting for just such a time as this to take action, too. So are we capable of protecting the United States if something like that should happen?
Yeah, so there are a bunch of issues that you raise. Let me put them in a few separate categories. The fact that the courts have made some outrageous and unrighteous rulings in recent months and years regarding redefining marriage, that's very grave, very serious. The fact that our president has been the most aggressive pro-gay activist president in our history, that's of grave concern. Does that mean that a moment has come where God has lifted his hand of protection, or did he lift it long before with the slaughter of tens of millions of babies in the womb? Has he lifted it for other reasons? Certainly, we're in a precarious situation. I don't think that we can just boldly say God is with America, because there's so much injustice, so much uncleanness. We are the world exporter of pornography. Our families are in terrible shape. There's so much backsliding and compromise within the church. In a different context, Jesus said in Matthew 6, if the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? So without a doubt, we are in a grave moral condition now, and we need God's mercy. If he gave us what we deserve, really any person, any time, but all the more now, if he gave us what we deserve, we'd be crushed. That being said, only God knows where lines are crossed and when protection is removed. But in every level, we have to be all the more careful because the stands we've taken have been utterly outrageous. I don't think that China and Russia are looking for a pretense to have a conflict and clash with us on a military level. I don't think that right now at all. The day could come. But certainly, if we go into Syria, then we go against China and Russia, Russia in particular, who are saying stay out because Russia is backing the government. Iran is also standing with the government of Syria, fighting against the government. Al-Qaeda is standing with those that are fighting against the government. The whole thing is evil against evil, and hundreds of thousands of people are suffering terribly in the midst of it, and the Christian population, above all, becomes scapegoated in the midst of it. The biggest problem, it seems, though, Roger, was that our president made an announcement, you've crossed the line and we're taking action. You know, you do this and we're taking action. And then it's like, well, we got to think about it. Well, I need congressional approval. That has made us look very bad. I'm not out to bash our president. This is not a conservative political talk show where I spend all my time bashing the president. But it's a miserably muddled situation. This reminds us again, Roger, of how we are lacking in clear leadership. Where is our clear policy and vision regarding Egypt? Where is our clear policy and vision regarding Syria? Or even to say what we stay out of and not. It's really muddled, and we're now making a greater mess of it. But we need to pray for God's mercy to be poured out in Syria and for the gospel to go forward. It's the only hope of the nation. This is a civil war between different Muslim groups. And more importantly than our national defense, you're absolutely right, sir, more importantly than focusing on our economy, more important than any of that is our national repentance, humbling ourselves before God. And if the government leaders aren't going to do it, then we as believers have to do it in their place and pray for mercy. It's a very precarious day, Roger, and I understand our plans with Syria just to bomb in a punitive way to say, look, what you did was horrific and crossed lines with chemical warfare, and we are going to give you a very intense slap on the wrist saying, don't you dare do that again. It's going to be terribly costly if you do. And with no thought of a ground invasion whatsoever, I don't think our nation would go for another ground invasion in the midst of being mired in Afghanistan and Iraq for so long and so many precious American lives being lost. But we need to really pray for mercy, Roger. You're absolutely right on that. Thank you, sir, for the call, 866-348-7884. Chris in St. Petersburg, Florida. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, and shalom to the home. This is Chris in St. Petersburg. You know, as far as statesmen are concerned, I used to live in the stupid state of New York. I got out 20 years ago to avoid the vulturine taxes of Albany. And I don't pay any taxes down here, so that's one of the main reasons I came to Florida. Plus, being a vet, I have a homestead exemption. Hallelujah! So this is, you know, from a financial point of view, this has been a good move coming down here, even though I felt I was in exile. As far as New York is concerned, and being Labor Day, I think, you know, I got the vibe. Look, New York is probably the biggest job-killing state in the history of this country. And you're from Long Island. I did a show, by the way, a show at Queens College. Did you go there?
I graduated from Queens College in 77.
Wow, because I did an art show at Queens College about in the 80s. It was at NYC WPA Litho, and it was dynamite. And the art historian out there, a wonderful man, lent me the lithos, and I disappeared in the subway with them.
All right.
Took them back to Westchester. It was incredible. The litho show, the bridge building. New York used to be. Let me ask you a question. When do you think the last time the stupid state of New York built a major monumental bridge?
To tell you the truth, I'm really not an expert on the job situation or job creation situation in New York. And the last time, well, where are they needing another bridge to build? I'm not clear on that.
Let me just give you a hint about the bridge. It was when the Beatles came to Shea Stadium.
Sorry,
their first world tour.
That was 1965. Ed Sullivan was 64. Shea Stadium was 65.
Right. Okay. So if you're talking virtually, you know, a half a century of absolute criminal negligence and dereliction of duty on the party, Albany and New York State, especially Long Island. Long Island's the worst. That's why Long Island's a death trap now.
Hey, tell you what, Chris. By the way, you're talking to me outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, right at the moment, just to let you know where our broadcast originates from. But we got a break coming up. Now, look, folks, I asked for it. I said today on the air, folks could call about any subject under the sun, even if it wasn't part of my expertise on the Line of Fire. So here, I'll say it. I asked for it. I got it. Hey, Chris, you seem pretty passionate, man. I hope you have that same passion for serving God. We'll be back with some more comments. It was Brett McKay. Brett McKay with the four qualities of a true statesman. I've got some more comments to make before we're out of here.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. What do you know? Thanks, Joey. So Mike Huckabee and Lauren Grimm were live today also. Well, neat. Good for them. And, hey, we got plenty of phone calls through the day, so plenty of folks listening. I decided to do the show live. Number one, because I love doing radio. If I have a choice between doing it and not doing it, I do it. Number two, didn't want to just play an old repeat show. And number three, it gives many of you an opportunity to call in that don't normally have a chance. So my joy to do it. But hey, to do a little of everything. And remember to look for my article tomorrow. I'll be posted in the morning, Where Are the Statesmen? So connect with me on Facebook. Ask Dr. Brown, ask KDR Brown on Facebook. As soon as it's posted, you'll know about it. Or connect with me via Twitter. It'll be tweeted out as soon as it's posted. And I think you'll enjoy the article. And it'll be a challenging question that's posed and a visionary one as well. You can connect with me on Twitter at hashtag doctor. That's Dr. Michael L. Brown, of course, one word. But to have done a little of everything, Matt, we're going to answer some e-questions. All right? So this is a question from, who is it from? I don't see a name on it. Thomas. It's from Thomas, August 20th. I've watched Dr. Brown's videos. He often quotes from a Bible. When I look for it in the King James Version, it doesn't match. Can you tell me what source does he read from? I'm not a huge fan of the King James Version, as it differs from my Jewish friend's Bible. And since the Torah came first, I'd like to read an English version that has both the Old and New Testament. Thank you. Of course, Thomas, the King James has the Old and New Testament. It's the complete Bible, and it's a magnificent translation, but it's older English. It doesn't speak the way we speak today, and we have better manuscripts today so that we have more accurate understanding of what the original text said and even better grasp on the language in certain ways. So when you see me reading, I'm either reading from the NIV, the New International Version, which reads very well in contemporary English, or the ESV, the English Standard Version, which doesn't always read quite as well, but is probably even more faithful to the original texts than the NIV. Those are the ones you'd probably hear me reading from. Sometimes you'll hear me just translating straight from the Hebrew into English, or I might be reading from something called the New Jewish Version or the New Jewish Publication Society Version. That's a very good Jewish translation of the Old Testament scriptures. So there we go. I'm on a run here. I'm on a roll. On a roll, because time is short. This is from Terry. Hello, Dr. Brown. Thank you for your ministry. This summer, a friend of mine, someone I'm trying to lead to Christ, agreed to read an article I gave her. If I agreed to read the book she just finished, the book is called Jesus Interrupted by Bart Ehrman. I won't bore you with the details of my response to the book. I'll just summarize by saying I wasn't moved by his list of discrepancies and what he calls irreconcilable contradictions in the Bible. In the book, he goes through his accounts as to why the Bible is not an inerrantly historical account. What disturbs me is that he states views like his are now being taught in theological schools. Does this ring any bells for you? I'd like to get your response to his book. Terry, you were right to not be moved, because there are answers to these different apparent discrepancies. And sometimes we have the different authors giving us different perspectives on the same story. And if we could be there to see the whole story, we could piece it together better. sometimes it's just like having three witnesses give their accounts of events that they saw from different angles and were reporting with different emphases and perspectives. And it's they're all telling the truth, but we can't put it all together. So we understand that. Readers of the gospel find what others have called an essential harmony, that they're giving the same message and telling us the same thing through their own unique perspectives. But it's actually the reverse that's true. What Professor Ehrman is putting forth in his books, Misquoting Jesus and Jesus Interrupted, is nothing new. It's nothing new at all. These have been taught in liberal theological schools for decades and decades. What happened, Professor Ehrman, whom I debated at Ohio State University a few years ago on does the Bible provide an adequate answer for the problem of suffering, and we had very friendly interaction. I'm sure I can interact with him now in a friendly way in the midst of our differences. But he used to be a born-again Christian and then began to question the reliability of the New Testament text, and then the problem of suffering, his dad dying of cancer, it seems different things like that pushed him over where he became an outspoken agnostic, respected New Testament scholar, also outspoken agnostic. But what happened is that he wrote this book, Misquoting Jesus, and suddenly, I think everybody's shocked, not because it was a bad book in terms of badly written or something, but it suddenly became a national bestseller. Why? I mean, what about it? The problem was you could read the book and get the impression that this was new stuff. Oh, no, no, the liberal seminaries have been teaching these things for decades. They go back into the 1800s. Liberal skeptical approach to Scripture that there's a possible contradiction, you're going to make it a contradiction. Rather than saying, hey, these look like discrepancies, but let's see if we can find harmony between them. No, the liberal critical approach is let's look for discrepancies and demolish the text. That's how it often is approached. So this became a national best-selling book. He's written now several national best-selling books, and that's what's brought him to prominence on the popular level. But conservative scholars have dealt with these things for many, many years. And going back into the early church, they were debating these things and discussing how the apparent discrepancies fit, but recognizing that the Gospels were true and God's word. And some of the world's top New Testament scholars, as fluent in the Greek as Professor Ehrman, as knowledgeable of the sources, and even more than Professor Ehrman, have come to opposite conclusions concerning the reliability of the text. And you need to go with that strong viewpoint of faith as you have it in response to your friend. All right, we are out of time. We're going to have some great broadcasts tomorrow and through the week, so be sure to join us. Have you signed up yet for the Israel tour? Have you? Have you signed up for the Israel tour? No? Well, go to my website. It's May 20th to 30th of next year. It's going to be the tour of a lifetime. I'll be joined by Professor Michael Redelnik, Professor of Jewish Studies at Moody Bible Institute. He is going to be such an asset on the ground. We'll be doing teaching and Q&A sessions together. I'll be doing live radio broadcast from Israel as well, God willing. My colleague Scott Volk will be part of the tour. It's going to be a great time. You need to get your deposits in if you'd like to go. Go to askdrbrown.org. Again, it's May 20th to 30th next year. But the sooner we get folks signed up, the better we can do in terms of guaranteeing more seats for more folks that want to come later on. All right, and friends, first hour tomorrow. So if you don't get it on your local radio stations, you can get it by listening online at AskDrBrown.org. I will be joined by Pastor Jay Hazelip. He is one of the pastors featured on the reality TV show Preachers of L.A., a show that's creating a lot of controversy and has a lot of people not happy with the show at all. We'll hear from Pastor Jay, and you'll hear his heart, and you'll hear his perspective on the show. That'll be first hour tomorrow. All right, friends, out of time. Again, visit the website if you believe in what we're doing and want to stand with us and help us by becoming a monthly supporter or with a one-time gift. Just go to AskDrBrown.org. Right on the homepage, click on Donate. My bottom line today, don't be moved by circumstances. Don't be moved by things that are here today and gone tomorrow. Be moved by what is eternally true.